Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and broadcasting live, unrehearsed, and unscripted all over the world by the magic of the electronics of voiceofvashon.org. And I may sound a little bit scratchy today, so I'm going to move the binnacle list to the top before I deliver my greetings and tell all of you that I got slammed right up the stern tube by this WPM or whatever the name of it is. And it also spread to my eyes, and so I'm not at my full alpha status. But I assure you that all of this is transitory, that also shall pass. And I am able to drive today, but there's so many things that happened as I made my way through the urgent care system last night that I'm going to devote a little bit of time to that in my next broadcast, because I have two of my friends on with me, and we're going to talk about the promised business of seating in aircraft, and we're going to talk about a lot of other things as well. So the binnacle list has not only your captain, as you can tell by listening to me, but also all of the rest of Captain Joe's people. I am trying to follow the instructions that were given to me by the people at Alan Moore Emergency Room, and it is my wish and my hope and my command that all of Captain Joe's people who are also on the binnacle list follow the instructions of their medical practitioner, so that all of us come out into the sunshine. And I will talk more about this next week, because there's some interesting things that might be helpful to all of you that happened to me, which I'm going to pass on. My greetings are that we are well now into the new year. And at the end of my broadcast last week, a much-loved friend came in with a gift. And it was Laura of Laura and Ron, who are some of Captain Joe's people here on the island. And they are, of course, a Coast Guard family. And Laura came in with a gift and a lovely note attached to it. And I make the mention here because friendships are two-way channels, and I had not done my part in this one. And Laura and Ron had sent me a message in the beginning of the holiday season, hoping that I might be able to be out at the lighthouse for a time while their children, who are also Coast Guard people, were there, so that we could have some time together. And I had neglected, because my chief yeoman has gone on liberty, had neglected to reply to that. And so Laura assured me that I remained firmly attached in their love, affection, and respect and regard. But the gift was a lovely coffee mug, and it had Point Robinson on it, and it was just a beautiful thing, and it's sitting awaiting my infusion with coffee when I get back to Captain's Quarters this afternoon. The other greeting that I send in particular today is to my son Stephen, who is in Fairbanks, and he is working with a young person who needs some of Stephen's particular skills. Stephen is a special education specialist. He is the special education specialist for the Fairbanks School District. And he is doing some really wonderful things with children, including his own son, Benaya, who has been blind from birth. And so greetings to all of those people. And so we're going to get right into the program, because we never have enough time to do all of these things. And for the first time, Craig Bellis is with me. And Craig is, first of all, Captain O'Brien's student, was his co-pilot sitting in the right seat when Captain O'Brien performed that feat of magnificent airmanship of putting the airplane down in the top of the trees. But he is also in his own right a doctor of laws, and has so many other accomplishments that I'm going to ask him to give a quick, short, and pithy CV of his life, and then we're going to get into the questions that have come from Captain Joe's people. So, Doctor, it's over to you.
Hey, thank you, Captain. That's a real honor and privilege to be sitting here next to you. Listen to your show regularly, and love the topics you talk about, and all the friendships that you have around the world, and all the listeners. We're going to be talking here initially, as you just introduced, about my CV, my favorite topic in the world. No, not really.
No, that's all right. Well, the other two people sitting here are completely enamored with themselves. So, yes, carry on.
It's funny. I just looked across. You can't see because there's a truck in front of it. But I looked out the window, and in front of the church across the street, there's a sign, and on the sign it says, "Walk humbly." And I think that might have been directed to me specifically for this morning. But in terms of my background, I don't know. I'm a proud Teamster, used to drive a tow truck, did that for a while. I was a Pinkerton security guard at San Francisco International Airport. Was a shoe salesman for many years. I think I had 54 different jobs or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm a lawyer and became a lawyer back in 1975, joined the Attorney General's office, was an assistant attorney general for several years. Then I got offered a job as a full-time law professor at Gonzaga, where I taught for almost 9 years, taught constitutional law and torts. Went back to school at Berkeley, got another degree in international law, and started my own private practice in Seattle with 13 attorneys. I'm an arbitrator and a mediator. I was awarded 2 Fulbrights, traveled around the world teaching various places. On a more local level, been on the boards of the Land Trust Board, the Community Council, president of that, the president of the Vashon Allied Arts, now VCA, the Dove Project, and now on the board of Voice of Vashon. And with that, you already mentioned the fact that I have experience in crashed planes.
Yes.
With Truman O'Brien, my partner in business, partner in ownership, I should say, of our plane, my CFI. And that's it in a nutshell.
All right. So I was going to make sure that you mentioned your things that you've done for the good of the island community, because that is one of the features of the three of us here together, that none of us needs to take a back seat when it comes to things that we've done to be a part of the island, and you all know that that's very important to me. So my other friend is my resident aviation expert, Captain Truman O'Brien, retired Alaska Airlines captain. And I particularly wanted the three of us to meet together because I had a Captain O'Brien did not know before, but he does now, that he has a constituency from the captain's chair, and that there are people who are listeners to this program who also want to have Captain O'Brien give his opinion on a number of different subjects. I tried to stifle that enthusiasm because he has little expertise in certain areas that I harbor as my own. But on the other hand, there are things in the world of which he is an expert, and I am delighted when I can have him come on with me. So the question came from one of mine, and because Truman is also a Vietnam vet, from one of our Vietnam veteran buddies, and is a shipmate of mine from the Coast Guard cutter Ingham, and it's Josh Humphreys. And in fact, Josh Humphreys is a direct descendant of the Josh Humphreys, and when I have him on later on this year, I'm going to talk to him about that. But his question for you, Captain, is why is it that we load airliners the way that we do, and why it is such a, I was going to use a word, but I looked at the list. Why is it such a scrum?
Yeah. Well, you know, unfortunately, you've got one of my areas of non-expertise because But
we never admit that, by the way.
Okay. I got it. No, they, you know, airlines have, boy, they've experimented with everything. And the objective here is to get the aircraft loaded as quickly as possible so that we can remain on time. And in fact, my former airline, Alaska Airlines, came in second this last year with on-time arrivals, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Who was first?
Unfortunately, I have to say it was Delta, which was our major rival.
Okay.
But they didn't beat us by much. I mean, we had a pretty high percentage of on-time arrivals. But this whole process of boarding the aircraft, there are two things that are important, boarding the aircraft and getting off the aircraft. And if you'll notice that some aircraft, like the 747, they'll use two jetways to load the airplane. And they split the first class or business class and the slave quarters in the back. They separate those so that they're able to load it quickly. But anyway, some of the methods that they've tried, I got a little paragraph here where it says that they've tried everything from a free-for-all to window seats first, to back of the airplane first, to random boarding, to boarding those passengers without hand-carried luggage. I mean, it goes on and on. In fact, Craig, you had some comment about
that. Yeah, I did. It's funny, the amount of research that's been done at universities and whatnot on this very subject. You would think that you would load an airplane the way you'd load any tube. You'd put the stuff in there, and those would go to the back, and then you'd fill it up just the way you walked in. Problem you run into are bags and seat shuttles, where you got to move, people got to get up so the person can get to the second seat or to the window seat or whatever the case may be. And they actually have done a quick study on this where the way we load planes generally, which is we put the privileged up front first, filling a plane from the front first is the worst possible way of doing it. But economics says that's the way we do it.
Yeah.
And then we typically load them from the back. Well, that basically is like one of the worst ways of doing it. It's very counterintuitive. On average, I can't remember which airplane this was that they did it with, but just for comparison purposes, 24 minutes to do that. Okay. Random, where you've got assigned seats, but you randomly can go into the plane, 17 minutes. Randomly with no assigned seats, a free-for-all, 14 minutes. But the best methods are almost impossible, the so-called WILMA, window, middle, aisle. The problem with that is that you'd separate families if you did it that way. That's what's referred to as the Stefan Perfect method, because he's the guy who came up with this particular method. They say probably the best way of doing it would be to have people go in and do one whole side of the plane first, every other seat. Okay, you'd skip a seat.
Yeah.
So you'd have group one, every other seat, all three on one side. Next group two, every other seat
on
the other side. And then fill the alternating seat on the other side. And then the other. So you'd have
four groups. You basically would
have four groups. And that would, they say on average, would probably fill the plane in about 10 minutes.
Well, I have here a list. I have the boarding priority for Alaska, American, Delta, Frontier, JetBlue, Southwest, Spirit, and United. And what's amazing is that American has 9 groups of boarding priority. Alaska has 4. Delta has 5. Frontier only has 2 groups. That's it. And I think Southwest doesn't have any. No, they do. They have 5 groups, actually. But there's no assigned seats with Southwest.
Right.
It's free for all there. You just go for it. And they have some seats that sit backwards, you know.
Yeah, they Southwest. Used to. Do they still?
I don't know if they yeah, still do, but I know they used to.
Right.
But the one thing that is common in all of them is that they have pre-board, and those are generally folks who need a little more time to get to the airplane. Alaska has military. They let the military, active duty military, board first.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
I like that.
I
yes.
do too. I think it's fair.
And as long as you like that, you're going to continue to have a long time loading that plane.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Families with young children, you know, all of that. And then, of course, the next group is the first class. And then they have their mileage and, you know, mileage plan elites and all of that. And then the passengers sitting in exit rows, they get them in. And by the way, exit rows, you know, you can't have children in an exit row. You have to be able to speak English in an exit row. And the flight attendants have to brief those passengers on the operation of the emergency exits and ask them if they're willing to do that. I was once commuting on an aircraft that had a family. I think he was a surgeon, and I'm not to disparage surgeons, but I think he was, and he brought his family on, and he had them all sitting in the exit rows, and I'm sitting there in uniform a couple of rows back, and he is really giving a flight attendant a hard time, saying, "This is my assigned seat, and this is where we're sitting." I finally got up and walked up to him in uniform and said, "Sir, these seats are not available for children, and if you've been assigned those, it was an error. And you need to figure out, you know, we're going to get a gate agent down here and figure out the seating kerfuffle, but they are not allowed to sit here." He kind of backed off at that point because he's talking to a uniformed person, I guess. But you know, I mean, I understand why it was an issue, because it's so darn hard to get on the airplane to start with. And once you find your seat, you want to get in it, you know, and get going. But
so it sounds like there is no rational seaman-like resolution to this particular question, and I am going to move us into some ICE questions, because the two of you mm-hmm. have had some questions about ICE for me, mm-hmm. and I want to be responsive to Captain Joe's people who ask me things. I'm just always ready to do that.
Of course.
So let's see. Captain, you had asked me whether it is more difficult for freshwater ice or,
mm-hmm. or saltwater.
Saltwater ice. Mm-hmm. And the whole business of ice management is not nearly as straightforward as it might appear, because when saltwater ice freezes, it takes temperature has to drop down a little bit lower, because yeah. what happens is that the salt precipitates out
right.
into little pockets into the ice.
Oh, it does.
Yes.
Oh.
So you can take saltwater ice and chip the ice itself off the top and melt it, and it will be fresh water.
Mm. So that I did not
there know. Are pockets of very heavily salted brine inside the ice, and so you would think that that might weaken it. But the freshwater ice, there's only one big lake in the world that freezes over, and that's Lake Superior. And so when Lake Superior freezes over, the ice is annual ice, 1 year old. Ice gets harder as it gets older. It gets harder if it's put under pressure. It gets harder if it is ridged. And when you have all three of those combined together, as you do in Antarctica, for example, where the saltwater ice is can be a multi-year ice, and it can be in under heavy pressure from the wind blowing across the surface of it, and it can be where blocks of it have come together and they ridge.
Sure.
A ridge is almost impenetrable. You have to back and ram through it. Mm-hmm. So, freshwater ice, when I was breaking ice up in the Great Lakes, we're going to talk about that, because a counselor comes from the Great Lakes and had asked me some questions mm-hmm. about that. And it's only 1 year old.
Before that,
yes, sir.
This is a really stupid question, but what is the maximum thickness of ice that you can break? I mean, is there a maximum depth or thickness of the...
In Antarctica, I broke into Hut Point in 20-foot thick multi-year ice.
Wow.
And it was back in Ram 24 hours a day. It took me 2 weeks to break 24 miles from the ice edge into Hut Point.
And that's 24 hours a day.
24 hours a day, and you just have to keep right on going. It takes a huge toll out of the ship and the crew, and it is you're using up a lot of fuel, but icebreakers carry a lot of fuel. So, so that was some years ago. The Polar class, which are very powerful ships, don't have quite as hard a job of it.
So you were talking about backing and ramming.
Yes.
So, but are you really breaking the ice by ramming into it, or are you sliding up on top of it and the weight?
Both
of it.
What happens is that F still equals MA as it has since the beginning of time, and that as you back off, and then you back off as far as you've broken astern of you. If it's really cold, of course, it's refreezing behind you. That's what happens up in the Great Lakes sometimes.
Wow.
And so you back off to get a really good run at it. And then you go ahead, all ahead full, throttles all the way forward. And the ship will not only rise up on top of the ice, but the shock will hopefully open up a lead, open up a crack in the ice, which is called a lead. If it doesn't do that, then you just back and ram. You just have to keep on doing it. It is quite an operation. The ships are designed for it, and they if they're handled properly. One thing that you never do, here's a little piece of ice breaking arcana, is that when you back down in the ice, you always make sure that the rudder is amidships.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and there's an ice knife sitting up above the rudder to protect it. If you back down with the rudder any place off of amidships, you may wipe the rudder off, which means that you go home on the propellers. The propellers, about steering with the propellers? You certainly can do it. And there is, at least in my ship, there was a drill that we did every so often where we would steer the ship using just the propellers. Icebreaker propellers are enormous, and they are set as far out on the beams as you can get them so that there is a twisting moment when you go ahead on one and astern with the other.
Right.
So,
and do you use that technique for breaking ice as well, using asymmetrical thrust?
You use that when you get stuck.
Okay. Yeah, you need to
wiggle yourself off. Right. And there are a couple of other techniques that you use as well to get yourself off. Mm. My rule was that whoever had the con when she got stuck had to stay with her and get her off.
No
matter how long it took. And so I had the con one time, and I got her up on top. I did not back down quite soon enough. And she went up a little higher than I had calculated she would, and it took me over 4 hours to get off.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, to get her off.
So here's a bit of Arcania for you.
Yes, sir.
If you're landing a jet on icy runways, that you can use the asymmetrical reverse thrust to steer the airplane.
Hmm.
And, in fact, I've landed many times with a very strong crosswind, and the wind wants to weather vane you, so that pushing on that vertical stabilizer wants to weather vane you into the wind.
Sure.
And the way you keep yourself going straight is that you reverse, stronger reverse on the opposite side, which pulls the nose back to keep you going straight down the runway.
Yeah.
And that will happen until you get a slow enough speed that it no longer affects it.
So I'm going to take us up to the Great Lakes because Counselor comes from the Great Lakes. He comes from not far from Lorain, Ohio. And I think you had a Great Lakes ice question. And if you are looking mystified as to what that Great Lakes ice question was, then I will tell you my Lorain, Ohio story.
Okay, that's what I'm interested in.
Okay. So Lorain, Ohio is one of the mill towns on the southern shore of Lake Erie. And in the springtime of the winter in which I had north wind up there for the entire winter, spring thaw had started, and it was time to break the plug that would allow the ice to come out of Lorraine Harbor so we could start getting ships in there again. There was no room up inside the harbor to turn the ship around, so I backed north wind in using the propellers. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, the rudder is amidship, so I'm getting no rudder effect. And backing her in using the propellers and the twisting capability of the ship to back her in the right direction. And then use the propellers to mill up the ice, break up the plug, and then move slowly forward out through the breakwater. And all of the ice in the plug just came out behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I had built an opening out in the open lake so that there was some place for the ice to go, because you have to have some place for ice to go. And so that's how we did that. But the story that I'm going to tell here is one that Truman said that I should not tell because, well, anyway, maybe it'll become evident that when I do. And we're really coming up on my time, so I've got to move along in a smart and seamanlike fashion. So Lorraine has a newspaper called the Lorraine Journal. And the Lorraine Journal wanted to put a young lady reporter on with me for a day's icebreaking and write an article about the Coast Guard and its relationship to Lorraine, Ohio. And I said, fine. So this young lady came aboard and immediately endeared herself to my entire crew. And then we got diverted, and I wasn't able to land her. And so she stayed with me for a week.
Oh, geez.
And we berthed her in sick bay, so she had a nice, comfortable place. And she had her own head, and I gave her full rein to move around the ship and talk to anybody in the crew that she wanted and to write whatever she wanted. And I said, my only caveat to you is I want you to make sure that the credit to everything that we do here goes to the crew, because I'm their captain, but they're the ones who actually do all of the work. So the last article she wrote is a photograph. There was a photograph of me sitting at my desk in the captain's cabin in North Wind, and the caption to it said, this is Captain Joe. He is a friendly man and a cross between a bulldog and a stump. And so my crew thought that was lovely. And yet I was always and only and ever to all of them, Captain Joe. And I was never called Stumpy, although Captain O'Brien has said maybe that's what will come out of this.
It could happen.
But in any case, we're all the way up to our time. And far too quickly, because there were a lot of other things that we want to talk about. We're going to do this again with the three of us. And but next week I have a plan of doing things that are things that I've had to delay now for 2 weeks, including a book. So this is your Captain Joe, as always, up in the captain's chair. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again, counselor, captain, it is always my pleasure to have time to spend with you. Your friendships are the treasures of my life. So this is your Captain Joe, now on station and watching properly.